The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
It settles in your soul.
That would be the soul of Jefferson.
Morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa and
Janet Chandler.
And we're here broadcasting live from KCNR Studios. This is Jefferson State of Mind. We're live at 96.5 FM, where the music does sound a lot better. 1460 AM, we are your talk radio. And we're also streaming live all across the world at KCNRradio.com, KCNRradio.com, and we archive.
And we do, and that's usually how I hear the show, because I don't get radio in Bernie.
And we have archived everywhere.
That's right.
And every year, 4 years. So
no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm. And Alex, what is it, 5 minutes after we're done?
About 5 minutes, yeah, kcnrradio.com.
Yep. So it's a great thing. We have listeners worldwide. We want to say howdy to you folks in Germany.
How's it going, Ukraine?
Yeah. Holy mackerel. You can't make this stuff up. Anyway, to all the veterans and to all the people that have served their country and all the people that have supported those families, all those great sacrifices that were made in the past, we'd like to wish everybody a very happy and joyful Memorial Day.
Well, it's not really a happy day.
No.
But it is a solemn...
It isn't a happy day.
A solemn day and mm-hmm. one of celebration of those who have made the sacrifice.
Yep. And there's been a lot of them. Yep.
And this goes back to the Civil War, so it has now been a whole bunch of years.
A whole bunch of years since we've celebrated this. Well, everybody, we have an exciting show today. We're excited to have on a gubernatorial candidate.
Gubernatorial means governor.
I wish it was. Are you happy with the gubernatorial candidates?
Well, some of them.
I know. Anyway, yeah. Kind of a hint, Nicolette. Kind of a hint. Anyway.
We have Nicolette. And would you please pronounce for us your last name? Nyman?
It's Nyman.
Nyman. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Nicolette is not from Shasta County. She is from coastal California. But she does offer a choice. And we have all been laughing at the campaign literature, Nicolette, that was put out by Jared Huffman, in which he is trying very hard to get us all to vote for Robin Littaw. So
Yes. What
is the strategy there? And first of all, tell us something about you, where you're from, what you do, why you are running, and why you think Jared Huffman seems to be so afraid that you might be his contender.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. I live in a little town, actually. It's called Bolinas. It is right on the Pacific Ocean, so it is on the coast. But people often think it's in Marin County, so people think of it as kind of an urban or suburban area. But we are actually a very small town. I'm on our school board here, and both of my kids have gone through the school here. And we have grades pre-K through 8, and we have 130 kids. So we're a very small town, and the life of this community is very small. And actually, there's a lot of agriculture here. So the issues that I'm particularly focused on are right here in our own community, as well as things that I care about elsewhere. I'm a lawyer by training. I did practice law for 10 years. but I haven't been practicing law for a while. I married my husband, Bill Nyman, who started our ranch here in Bolinas and also started a meat company called Nyman Ranch. Some of your listeners might be familiar with the hot dogs or the bacon or the ham. They're kind of all over the place, even in Safeway these days. And we're not affiliated with that company anymore, but he spent his life building up that company. And when Bill left the company, there were over 700 farms and ranches that were part of the network that supplied the company with the meat. So that was a big endeavor to get that up and running and off the ground. And we still raise cattle, and we actually raise chickens as well on our ranch. I've been living in part of our ranch here for the last 23 years since I married Bill. Before that, I was living in New York for about 5 years, but I'm originally from Michigan. And my parents were both educators, and I have three siblings, so I grew up in a fairly large family. Always wanted to be involved in stuff that was happening in the world. I remember I was already volunteering on political campaigns when I was in high school, and then I went to college and majored in biology and French. I spent two semesters in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill doing internships when I was in college, so still very interested in just trying to understand how change happens. And after college, I went to law school. I went to University of Michigan Law School. Then I worked for a while as a prosecuting attorney. Then I worked for a law firm in Kalamazoo, Michigan, my hometown. And during that time, I also was elected to the city commission, which is the city council for Kalamazoo. Kalamazoo is a town about a little smaller than Reading, but not, it's about 80,000 people in Kalamazoo. And I served two terms on the city commission. And then I ended up working for two different nonprofit environmental organizations. And the second one, I first worked for National Wildlife Federation. Then I worked for something called Waterkeeper Alliance. And that was being run by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. at that time. And we were working on water quality issues. So mostly it was rural communities that were concerned about large industrialized animal facilities, like big concentrated hog operations, basically, for the most part, in North Carolina and Missouri. And people we were representing were mostly farmers and ranchers that had been there for generations and were concerned about these big industrial operations coming into their communities. So that's how I got involved in agriculture. That's how I met Bill Nyman. We were working with a lot of the farmers that were part of the Nyman Ranch Network, and they were people that we were supporting and trying to point to as examples of good stewardship of animals and land. And that's how I first met Bill Nyman. And then when we got married, I'm skipping a bunch of stuff about how we got to know each other and how we decided to get married and so forth. It was kind of an unusual union, obviously. I was living in New York and had never lived on a farm. But when we got married, I moved to our ranch in California, and I've been there ever since, so for the past 23 years. And that's how I got very involved in an actual working ranch, and I've spent a lot of time working on our ranch and also been with Bill on probably literally hundreds of other ranches and farms over the last 25 years, just sort of meeting the people and spending time understanding their issues. And everybody that we worked with were people of very diverse political backgrounds, everything from very liberal to very conservative. And we were always that was never a concern for us. We both, Bill and I, are people who like to work with lots of different people and just work together for the common goal. In the case of the work we've been doing, it's about producing really high-quality meat. And I've written three books about agriculture over the last 20 years. And the most recent book I wrote is called Defending Beef, The Ecological and Nutritional Case for Meat. So I've done a lot of speaking around the country and around the world about that book and just sort of making the argument for the importance of cattle on the landscape and beef in the food system and other meat, too. I'm a supporter of all kinds of meat. I got involved in the local politics here in my community because of COVID. When COVID happened, our school shut down like many other schools in California. And I realized right away that I did not think our school should be shut down. So I spent most of my summer of 2020 working with a small group of parents to try to reopen the school. And we did. In October of 2020, our school was back open, and we were one of the first schools in California that was fully reopened. And that's kind of what led to me, you know, paying a little bit more attention to the, you know, sort of the politics of our area. And that's when I started really paying attention to what Congressman Hoffman was doing in our area. And in 2025, when he was part of the announcement.
Yep. We did.
You got me?
Okay. Nicolette, are you back?
Nicolette, are you back?
I can hear you.
Okay, yeah, we lost you there just for about a second. You were talking about Hoffman is where we...
Yeah.
The last word we heard out of your mouth, which is really probably not...
Maybe one of
we thought maybe that was your last words. We don't want your last words ever to be Hoffman. Go ahead.
It was just getting good.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I always wonder about that when stuff like that happens. But anyways, so he was very much a part of the effort to remove the ranchers from the Point Reyes National Seashore. And in 2025, he was literally standing on a stage up in Point Reyes, a little bit north of us, announcing that 12 families were going to be leaving, and that he had been part of the effort to get them out of the Point Reyes National Seashore. And there was an immediate community outrage about this because everyone realized that 12 families in our tiny area here are very, we're a very small town in Point Reyes, a very small town. And that's a lot of people, and that's a lot of economic activity, and it's a lot of history. So there was a lot of upset about it right away. And the more that I found out about Congressman Hoffman's role in it, the more I felt that he should not remain in that seat. Because it isn't just that he helped get the ranchers out of the Point Reyes National Seashore, and almost all of those families are no longer going to be ranching anymore. So literally shutting down and removing all that food production and all that economic activity, that was over 200 people that were living on those farms and ranches. So it's going to have a huge economic impact to our community, impact on the schools, impact on the businesses. And what really troubled me was when I spoke with the individual people involved, I found out that he was very involved in a lot of pressure and arm twisting to get people to agree to the deal. And I felt that someone that was doing that is not someone that should be representing this area. And when Proposition 50 was announced and how that would change what our district looked like and what Redding and, you know, Shasta, Siskiyou, Modoc would look like, and I realized that so many more people in rural areas would be added to this district and that would be part of Congressman Huffman's district if he were reelected, that is when I decided that I should step forward and challenge him.
Yeah, and I think that your ties with the rural situation here is really great. It's that you understand our way of life, and I don't think that Mr. Huffman really does. But also, we had Robin Latow on here last week. Seems like a fine lady. It's interesting, though, getting back to the flyer that was sent to Shasta County, you're probably aware of it. I mean, you know, on his part, it's sort of like, let's see, I'm going to get the Democrat vote anyway, and then I'll split the vote between Robin giving her the kudos because he believes that you're the real threat. And, you know, the thing about Shasta County and where this flyer is, I think, something we wanted to bring up to you, because Shasta County probably is the voter base in the new District 2, probably has either the second or third most voters in their county. And it is a conservative county, and a lot of the way this is going to fall down is going to be something to where we're going to have the uninformed voter. And I know, I think you and I talked about the uninformed voter that we have. We've got a lot of people here who really don't know the issues. They see a flyer, they go, oh, yeah, this looks great. This is what I'm going to do. This is where we are, blah, 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 blah. Okay, kids, hop in the car. You've got soccer. You've got basketball. Let's move on. So what is it that you want to say to people that are really don't know you and that are not informed in what the political ramifications of 50 are? What do you want to say to them?
Yeah, it is very important to understand Proposition 50, because what it did was, the attempt was to create more Democratic seats for this state. But, of course, the effect of that is getting rid of Republican representation. And so the main districts that were affected is Congressman LaMalfa's district, the late Congressman LaMalfa's district, and also Congressman, I believe Thompson is the other one that was very affected by this. And so what the idea was is to try to get rid of Republican seats, and in order to do that, you had to take some of the Democratic seats and spread them out into other districts. And so everything was just redistributed, basically.
Well, one,
and this district, mm-hmm. where, pardon me?
Well, one particular thing, in, when you were mentioning Thompson, Kevin Kiley, who has always been a very, very staunch Republican, very, very strong Republican constitutionalist, who he has now gone to... I believe declined to state. He has, or independent party, I'm not sure which, but I know he's not a Republican any longer because he doesn't feel he can win as a Republican in his
that's
district.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So there are quite a few people that are affected by this in terms of the, you know, the sitting representation that's there. But for Redding, what this means is, and the people in Shasta County, what this means is that the redistricting has taken Shasta, you know, and also Siskiyou and Modoc, and added them to what was previously a very Democratic, a very blue district, and that was District 2, where Congressman Jared Huffman is currently sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are people who have always been part of a conservative, you know, sort of district, the way it was drawn, but now they're basically being tacked on to what was a very, very Democratic district. So the district, District 2, previously had a Democratic rating of plus 40. So it means that a typical Democratic candidate would win by 40 percentage points,
yeah,
just based on demographics.
Mm-hmm.
And then this redistricting changed that, brought it down to about plus 20. So it's still a considered a Democratic district, pretty heavily Democratic. And so it's meant to keep the seat very safely in Democratic hands, but it means that all the people that once were represented by, and, you know, were pretty consistently always represented by a Republican, are now tacked on to what is considered still a Democratic seat. So that makes it almost impossible mathematically for a Republican to win the seat. Now, if Congressman LaMalfa were still alive, he might have, and we're running for this seat, he might have been able to win it.
By his own acknowledgement, by his own acknowledgement, he said he didn't think he could win it.
Yeah.
By his own acknowledgement. Go ahead.
It would be very, very difficult for him.
Yes, ma'am.
But he had a very strong name recognition,
mm-hmm,
and,
yep,
and you man. Know, and was very well liked.
Mm-hmm.
So there was maybe a chance that he could do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost an impossible task for any other Republican. So what's happened is that I'm running as an independent. I'm not running like Kevin Kiley, who was a Republican and is running as an independent. I'm actually an independent because, as I told you about my background a little bit.
Yes.
I've been very involved in politics and elected office for many, many years, but I have never been a member of a political party. I've never been a Democrat. And I've never been a Republican. I'm truly an independent. And the reason for that is, I think, just because I'm a really independent thinker, and I really like to work with people to solve problems. That's what anyone who's worked with me on the school board would tell you that. anyone who worked with me when I was on the city commission for those 4 years would tell you that. And I had really good friendships and good relationships with people on all, you know, Republicans and Democrats. I was someone who just really wanted to work on problems.
Right. I think
that's my background.
Yeah. I think the thing is that a lot of times, you know, what we're looking for, another thing that we have a question about, James Gallagher had said that the only solution of the situation we have in the state of California, because we are very in the state legislative body, we are very heavily weighed in the Democrat side. I mean, like 4-1,
yeah.
Both in the Senate and the Assembly. And so his advocation was state split. There are four counties now that have supported with their boards of supervisors a resolution for state split, how that's going to look. I've talked to James, known him for years. We talked about how that state split would look. His original thought from north to south, with the coast being on one side, inland on the other side. He even said himself, that's not locked in concrete. What's your thought process about state split, since Congress would definitely have a say, and you would definitely have a say, because it would be sort of in the middle of it. What's your thought on state split?
Well, you know what? I really think we're all Californians, and I really favor the idea of us figuring out how to work together. And in fact, that's kind of what I was, you know, getting at a moment ago. My real passion is trying to bridge the gap.
Sure.
I think not just in California, but nationally.
Well, let me just, and I'm just trying to get some clarity. That's all. The thing is that we have 80 people in the assembly. That's 80. For 40 million. In New Hampshire, they have 1.3 million people, and they have 400 in their assembly, 400 people, which means if you want to get elected, you can go knock on a thousand doors, and you wouldn't have to spend $1 million to run for state senate, so, or state assembly. So what we're talking about here is the ratio. So how do you fix California in that ratio, and with it being 4-1? How do you fix that? And that's why I think James went to state split. How else would you fix that? How do we get the Democrats to do what we want them to do when they don't have to? Why should they give up power? Why should they move their position? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, to me, first of all, I don't think we need more people involved in representation. I mean,
New Hampshire has it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not spending so much money on politics because of the high number of voters in a district. That's not what's happening. What's happening is because of the way, you know, court cases have gone in, you know, a couple of decades ago, there's basically been a cap lifted on what money can be poured into politics. And so what we're seeing now is that money is influencing the outcome of elections in a way that it never had before. And so it's really so much less about people and connections and, you know, one-on-one interactions with people. And I don't really think that's because that there are too many
people. It's still
people
the voting process, yeah. So anyway,
we really need campaign finance reform. We have to get the money out of politics, or at least control it closer to where we were.
Great, okay.
You know, a couple of decades ago. I mean, obviously, money has always influenced politics, but the way it's happening now is something unprecedented, and it's very counterproductive.
Nicolette,
to, you know, good representation.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Obviously,
sure.
Jared Huffman is not our ag person, so we're not going to vote for him because he's going to support agriculture. But you do have another, at least one opposition on the ballot, and that is Robin Littaw. Why should we vote for Nicolette Nyman instead of Robin Littaw?
Well, I think the main argument I would make to anyone who would consider voting for a Republican is just that you want to win in November. I mean, that really is what matters, and especially because Congressman Huffman is so poorly suited to represent your area. He is not just a Democrat. He's actually someone who's very far left-leaning and who's very driven by sort of natural resource issues from the perspective of a very hardline, absolutist environmental perspective. He doesn't think that humans should really be involved with natural landscapes. He thinks they should be off of them. So he's right here in my own community. He supported a petition to remove access for local fishermen. Just north of me, in the Point Reyes National Seashore, he was very involved in removing ranching because he thinks ranching shouldn't be happening in public land.
Yeah, you said that. Yep.
You know, yeah, and he's not in any way, he's very supportive of removing, you know, access to timber and logging. So, you know, everything where you could think, well, this is how humans can make a living, he's also been opposed to oyster farming. I mean, you know, whatever the issue is, if it involves humans and natural resources, his position is you should remove or limit or totally restrict the human access to that resource. That's not my perspective at all. I really believe in good environmental stewardship. I've advocated for that my whole life. But I think humans do that. That's people that are working with the resource, fishermen and farmers and people in the timber industry. Those are the people that know those places the best and have
and
the most
have the control. Sure.
knowledge.
And a lot of that happens in the state, too. We've got Gavin Newsom here, and, of course, we've got, you know, 60 Democrats and 20 Republicans in the Assembly. Four of those Republicans always vote with the Democrats, and we have, it's 30-8.
I don't think that Jared Huffman is going to get a large showing of votes in this area, but Robin Littaw might. So why should the people in Shasta County and the North State vote for Nicolette Nyman instead of Robin Littaw?
And I mean, party preference is one thing, but what's... Give us a reason. We got about 2 minutes.
Yeah,
because I can beat Jared Huffman. I mean, that's kind of the bottom line. Well, the reason I was trying to describe some of his positions more detailed is to explain to people how counter his positions are to things that they would care about. Okay, so a vote for a Republican, any of the Republicans on the ballot, would be something that would enable Huffman to easily roll through the November election. And that's what's going to happen if a Republican wins the primary.
Well, we do have the dam removals that happened here, which was something, but we've only got about a minute left. If you could give us how people get a hold of you and all that great stuff, roll it.
Yes, well, I have a website. It's Nicolette for Congress, F-O-R, Congress.com. And there's information on the website. There's also a way to contact us. And, you know, we love for people to contact us and let us know how you want to get involved. And we're always interested in, you know, getting feedback and all the help that people are, you know, able to provide.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Nicolette. Have a wonderful day. And feel free to share this interview with anybody you'd like. Certainly have our permission.
Good luck on the primary.
Good luck on the primary.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Time has come.
For 51, and we're getting it done.
We're getting it done. We have Gary Oxley coming up.
For me, the best part of my day is when a commercial loan actually closes. The owner of the business, they finally have the cash to go do what they want to do to grow their business. They might have stressed about this, hoping it would all work, and when it all comes together as planned, it's a win-win for everyone. So I like that. I like it when people are happy, like, yes, they got the money, because it can be very stressful.
Plumas Bank. Experienced bankers. Real solutions. Visit plumasbank.com.
Planning a wedding? Celebrate the moment with a free dinner for two at Odell Craft Barbecue. With our slow-smoked brisket that melts in your mouth, even Texans say it's some of the best they've ever had. We cater events and weddings of all sizes, from intimate gatherings to receptions of 1,000 guests. We make delicious food and great service, so you can stay present with the people who matter. Odell Craft Barbecue, real wood, real fire, real flavor. Book your free tasting at readingbarbecue.com. Again, book your free tasting at readingbarbecue.com.
Hey neighbors, have you ever wondered where you can find a store that truly feels like home? Well, look no further. Grange Co-op has been community focused since 1934, and guess what? We're not just a store, we're owned by customers just like you. Yep, that's right, it's all about community here. So why choose Grange Co-op? When you shop with us, you're not just supporting a store, you're supporting a community. Grange Co-op has what you need for your home, garden, pets, and farm. Grange Co-op, where the values of yesterday meet the needs of today.
Turtle Bay's glowing wild and illuminated Wildlife Lantern Festival is back and better than ever for 2026 at the Sundial Bridge in Redding, California.
Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with larger-than-life displays of plants and animals from around the world,
including dinosaurs and icons from ancient Egypt.
Jump on the new Turtle Express for a fun ride through the show.
Glowing Wild is May 1st through June 28th, 7 to 10 p.m. Buy tickets online for the best price at turtlebay.org.
Everybody calls the state Alliance. Yeah!
Could someone you know use a little extra comfort right now? Alliance Heating and Air is proud to team up with Lennox to bring Feel the Love to our community, a special program providing free heating and cooling systems to homeowners in need. A simple nomination can make a big difference. Nominate today at homecomfort.org or call 2212-642 Alliance Heating and Air, because everybody calls us 2212-642.
Hi friends, R.C. here from Tobacco and Brew, sharing this month's Cigar of the Humidor. H. Upman Sunrise. Grown, fermented, and aged at the A.J. Fernandez factory, this stick is medium in body, offering an Ecuadorian Connecticut seed wrapper, along with robust, hand-selected Nicaraguan long filler. Notes of coffee, cedar, and nuts make this a perfect cigar for any time of day. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
I will always do my duty, no matter what the price. I've counted up the cost, I know the sacrifice. Oh, and I don't want to die for you, but if dying's asking me, I'll bear that cross with honor, cause freedom don't come free. I'm an American soldier, an American beside my I will proudly take a stand. When liberty's in jeopardy, I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front lines, sleep in peace at night. American soldier, I'm an American.
Yes, we are. We're Americans. God bless all of you in the military. God bless you all.
Proud of our America, proud of our soldiers, and proud of the red, white, and blue.
And talking about a veteran, I'm sitting across from one, and his name is Gary Oxley, and he is running for District 5 here in Shasta County. How are you, brother?
Good, Terry. How are you today?
I'm good.
Great. Hey, I just wanted to start off by saying, I know we're short on time. There's a lot that I'd like to cover. We're not going to get through all of it, but we'll give it a shot, okay? So thanks for having me on. So I just want to really remind everybody about what this weekend is, and it's about honoring our fallen brothers and sisters who died giving their life for this country. And I also want to pay tribute and thank all the surviving members of the families of those soldiers who gave their lives. Our veterans will not be forgotten, and I hope they never will. I just wanted to start off by saying that.
And I do not like the fact that we have changed Memorial Day to the first Monday, or the last Monday, or whatever. It has become a Monday holiday instead of a specific day, which it should be May 30th.
We've changed many holidays.
At least,
like President's Day.
Yeah.
It was George Washington and Lincoln. Now it's President's Day.
At least they put Veterans Day back where it should be on November 11th, and I think Memorial Day should have been that.
But we also have every day we have these stupid things like Sprinkled Donut Day.
Yes.
Or, you know, Hot Chocolate Day, or you don't need to, you know, you need to buy more toilet paper day.
Or LGBTQRSTUV Day.
Every day is someday. Oh, man, it just gets to be so ridiculous. Anyway.
It does. So, anyway, we're about 10 days away from an election, and I just wanted to give a shout-out to the gracious donors who have supported me during this campaign, for my children, and especially my wife, Wendy. She's been a co-partner in this venture from the very beginning. Without her support, this would not have happened. This campaign has not run the way that we wanted it to do because we've had so many numerous family challenges that have come up with during the last several months. But we are confident that the message that I've been able to put out there resonates with the citizens in District 5. It's a broad message. It's a philosophical message, but it also shows how I'm going to operate when you're not there. It's going to show who I am, because that's important. I can speak to you in front of you and say one thing and then go behind closed doors and do something else. And so this message has been about trying to get out who Gary Oxley is. And the message has always been about "In God We Trust." God in God we trust is our national motto. And that needs to resonate with the people in District 5 and throughout Shasta County. Even if I don't get elected, that needs to be on the forefront of everybody's mind. And we always talk about God, family, country. And we need to remember that God does come first. Family comes second. This campaign has come second to all the family issues that we've had to deal with. And then we try to put country back where it belongs, in the third place. So win, lose, or draw, Terry and Janet, I hope that the message that I've brought forth to people, that they'll remember that they are in charge, that they hold the elected people sitting on that board. They need to hold them accountable for the decisions that they make. And if they don't have the honor and integrity to fulfill what they said they were going to do, then they need to step down. The process, according to Joseph Story, one of our first Supreme Court justices, stated that our process is, if you don't like somebody, you got 4 years or 2 years to get them out of office. So you guys have a chance to vote for Supervisor Kellstrom, Councilmember Gallagher, or myself. I believe that I have the leadership abilities. I believe that I have the experience in dealing with the public to make wise decisions and to be successful in those things. My career as a leader in healthcare has demonstrated that. My career as a chairman for the California Rifle and Pistol Association has proven that. So I do have a proven record. Have I been in politics before? No. And that's not totally true. This is just a laughable note. But I was eighth grade class president, if for all that's worth. So there has to be a little bit of humor.
Did you run for Congress at one point?
I did. Oh, actually twice.
Oh, twice. Okay.
Yep.
So
and it teaches me a lot.
I want to point out something that Gary just said, is that every 4 years, if you don't like who is there and what they're doing, you have the opportunity to vote them out.
That's right.
You know what that is called? Term limit.
That's right.
We don't need the government to tell us when someone has to leave. We always have that power, that obligation to remove someone from office.
That's right.
That is the ultimate term limits held by the voters.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you, Janet. So there are a lot of. I was speaking to a lady just yesterday about some serious issues here in town, in our county. And I told her, I said, I am so discouraged by what I am seeing in leadership positions here in Shasta County, decisions that are being made. Mm-hmm. And I said, it is hard to find hope in how to make things change. And your last caller was talking about how to change the state of California. So people are looking for hope in how we can make things better, whether it's splitting the state of California, whether it's having a new person sitting up on the board of supervisors because you don't like the way the decisions that they've made. So it's about hope. How do we find hope? Well, hope comes by, in my belief, it comes from God. And you have to have hope in a higher power. You look at NA and AA, those two organizations are extremely successful, more successful than the other mental health programs that we have in Shasta County, because their first step is acknowledging a supreme power. So to me, we need to put God first back in our lives and our decisions that we made. The second one is we need to strengthen our families. We need to help and create jobs here in Shasta County that will get people employed.
I just have one question, because,
sure,
see, none of this has to do with government. All of this has to do with personal responsibility of parents, being a better parent, being a better Christian, being someone who follows God's laws. So I think that I appreciate what you're saying, and I love what you're saying, and all this is very true. But again, a lot of this comes to personal responsibility. So where does the elected official fit in to this personal responsibility, other than, like yourself, there's no question about your integrity. Your integrity is amazing. I can profess to this. This man's integrity is amazing. So I guess what I'm asking is that what can you see by using those values? What can you see that we can change in Shasta County? Go ahead.
So I think, and Terry, that your timing was perfect because that segues into number one, and that's the Health and Human Service debacle, which I call it. So one of the things that I did not hear the director talk about was responsibilities for the recipients of CalFresh. They, if so, as your board of supervisor, when I am given an agenda, which I think needs to be pushed out to 5 days, but given the fact that once I have the agenda, I need to start asking questions about what is happening here in Shasta County. Why is it that since March of 2025, we've given $10 million loan, then we gave another $5 million loan, increased that to $7 million, and then we gave another $10 million. So if I've done my math correct, we're over about $27 million that we've loaned to this department without holding them accountable. So I started researching HR1, which is what they're quoting as the main contributor and factor of that problem. Well, looking into that CalFresh 1, there are requirements that they did not discuss. And in that, it talks about, and this is from HR1, what CalFresh changes are included in HR1. It says, more CalFresh recipients will need to participate in work or community engagement activities to keep their benefits. Why didn't we talk about that? So they're talking about getting rid of different things, furloughing people. Where they're missing a crucial part of HR1. So as your board of supervisors, I will guarantee you, I read between the lines. I look at the fine print. And that's a huge issue that's not even being addressed by the board of supervisors. That's their full-time job. That's not my full-time job, but the first thing when I listened to her speak was, well, what does HR1 say? I never heard any of those board of supervisors question HR1 and how it affects the people. So, Terry, that's where my integrity comes from. That's where my ability as a leadership in healthcare has been successful is I ask questions. I look down at the bottom line. What's the root cause of the problem?
Mm-hmm.
So that is a big part of the problem. So the next big issue that I have.
Oh, there's a couple of things that we have had questions on.
Sure, go ahead.
Now, public comment, your opponent, your main opponent, Chris Kellstrom, has cut public comment to 2 minutes. He also, I'm hearing now, and I don't know if I have this accurate, this could be inaccurate, but I have heard now that there's going to be a limit to the time you have in public comment. In other words, there might be 30 minutes allowed for public comment, Well, I know now that when we have the regular calendar items that you can't speak on each one. You know, there's a lot of limitations. Would you lift those limitations, and how would it look with you as a supervisor in your opinion with that? Because I think both sides are tired of the public comment deal.
I think
cut off. I think it's rude.
You can't get your message across in 2 minutes. I'm sorry. So it's got to be a 3-minute minimum. You could even go higher than that if you wanted to. But 3 minutes, I think, is adequate to get your opinion across. The other thing that I would do, which I find so demeaning that I just I cringe, and the first time they said it to me when I was speaking, I just said, excuse me? And that is, when you ask them a question, the first words that come out of their mouth are, this is your time.
Well, they really don't have to answer the question, but in a regular calendar item or a consent calendar item, that's different than public comment. Go ahead.
No, and I understand that.
Sure.
Some
people out there may not, though.
I understand that. Thank you for clarifying
sure.
that. But I can tell you from my own personal experience over years of going to boards of supervisor meeting and in that open comment, asking the board questions and having them answer. So to have them change that just was very demeaning to me because that caught me totally off guard. So if I'm your board of supervisor and an open comment, you ask me a question, I will guarantee you I will answer it. I will never tell you this is your time because that's your time in front of me to ask me a question. And if you don't have time to come back and stay there for the whole agenda item, I will answer that question for you. So absolutely need to change it. We need to increase the amount of interaction between the public and the board of supervisors for two reasons. One, because the board of supervisors don't know it all, and they can get good insight from the public that they serve. So we need to have that good communication between
the public that they serve. Go ahead, sir.
We serve the people. It's not the other way around. And can I segue into the next part?
You go wherever you want.
Because I'm telling you, Terry, one of the reasons why I decided to run was when they gave themselves a pay raise and denied a 40 cents per hour increase to in-home support services. To me, that was such a slap in the face of the people that do the rock bottom labor for our most needy people. So that to me, that was just terrible. The second thing that, yeah, there's a long list. The next thing that I wanted, because of time, there's an issue that I really want to bring up. And that is with the DA, and there's two different issues, but I want to focus on the issue of her not having adequate deputy district attorneys. I know 2 years ago I was at a board meeting and a deputy DA got up there and was talking about how bad things are. So these board of supervisors have known that this is a problem, and they have failed to fix that issue. They're primary responsibility, the DA and law enforcement, is to protect and to serve the people. So if the people don't have confidence that a person who has violated the law is going to get prosecuted, then that's a huge issue for me.
I think that's a good point. But one thing you've got to realize is that the deputy district attorneys, I know they used three of them on the water splashing incident between Nathan Pinckney. And so really and truly, I mean, and when Stephanie Bridget was up for election, we may only have a few of them, but you know what, Gary? They were all at every single event. We had them there during the day. During the meetings, we would have people from the district attorney's office saying that they were on their own time, in their suits and the whole bit. Maybe I'm reading what you're saying maybe I'm not getting it, but I mean, I hold no sympathy on that department, and a lot of those people have quit, and they've quit, a lot of them have quit because of their superior. There's been at least 10 that have, so go ahead.
And I am not,
and three on that case, three on a,
I know,
a traffic
I remember.
Ticket.
If we don't have a lot of time, I'm just going to say that if we don't like who's in charge, we vote them out. Now
unfortunately,
I know.
Her term of office was extended.
Hers and the sheriff's.
Right.
Okay, so we have decisions that we have to make, and
change that.
Well, you know, Terry, it's a word that nobody's going to want to hear.
Go ahead.
And that's the recall.
Well, yeah.
If you do not like what your government official is doing and they're doing a poor job at it, then the people, have the responsibility to do something about it, and the law gives them that option.
And the state of California has made recall more difficult. After Shasta County recalled Leonard Moses.
Buddy, right.
Yes. And so this is why I link back to you have to have a trust and a belief in a higher power to get us through these
things. Well, that's true. Let me just clarify something here.
Okay.
Okay, so we don't know what the law is in recalling the district attorney. We don't know whether or not the attorney general, or if they could pass a law, that the attorney general, Bonta, of the state of California could say, okay, I'm appointing this person. Or, like when they did investigate Stephanie Bridget, they didn't say they weren't going to prosecute. They didn't say that there was nothing here, that they didn't see anything there. They just said they weren't going to pursue it. In other words, the situation of electioneering and using her staff for her particular campaign, the attorney general simply said, we're not going to look at this. We're not going to do this. Never said something one way or another. So if you give a pass or you're siding with a situation where you have somebody who arguably is not the person you want. I mean, in my mind, I can't recall her on one side and then on the other side say she needs more help. It really has to go right to the top. Maybe recall's the answer. Go ahead.
And so that was the other issue that I didn't speak about first was the electioneering allegations. We know that there's a court case going on right now. Unless it was settled.
No, there's news on that though.
Okay, so.
Nothing's happening at this point.
Yeah. Okay, so last time, because we were at court the last time,
yesterday.
Okay, yes, so I'm not aware of that.
Yes,
so,
sir, no problem.
Anyways, I think that, give me just one second here. And I apologize, listeners, for this pause and silence. If Terry played some music, we would be better off. But I got it. So I'm just
no dead air in radio. Yeah,
that's why I was just kind of stumbling through here.
You're fine.
Anyway, so that's an issue, though. Now you go back to the Health and Human Services and this loan from the general fund. We're giving all this money away, and Terry, one of the first things you asked me, if you will recall, I'm going to refresh your memory, when you found out that I was running, and you said, Gary, what about the roads? Okay, so what about the roads? We're spending all this money on health and human resources.
100% needs to go to the roads.
I'm just saying, we're spending money to keep an agency that to keep it afloat when the director can't keep it afloat, and other services that the Shasta County residents need are being not taken care of.
Well, the salaries are amazing for Health and Human Services. I forget what it is. I mean, the last thing I heard, and this was years ago, was $75 million of that money is in salaries. And when you look at the directors, every one of them are making well into six figures or $200,000, all that sort of stuff, where, as you said, a lot of the people on the lower tier can barely over the poverty limit, but their directors are making. In fact, I talked to one of the people that you had mentioned that are in that dilemma that needed the raise. And her comment to me was, my director won't talk to me. Well, he makes five times the money you do, and he won't talk to you. No, he won't talk to me. Over.
So the first thing that I'm going to do as a board of supervisors, I will push and will continue to push until we get a forensic audit. It has to be done. I can't sit up on that board and make decisions without knowing all the details and the facts. So the first thing that I will do is we will push for and have a forensic audit of not just we'll start with Health and Human Services to begin with.
From his special assignment, Lynn Carpenter is applauding.
Yeah, he really is applauding that. And you know that's so true. We have been promised in fact, Chris Kellstrom said he was going to do a forensic audit. I mean, all of them are going to do a forensic audit. Kevin said that. But nobody has done a forensic audit. It's been crickets ever since then. But the one thing I can say about Gary Oxley, if he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. Go ahead, sir.
You know, folks, and I'll just be totally honest with you. If I don't do it, I will step down. That's how I roll. You cannot say something, and especially the responsibility. Okay, and I'm going to take this back to my leadership in healthcare. My number one role in healthcare is being an advocate for you and making sure that your rights, your needs, you're taken care of, right? That's no different setting up on that board. I'm your advocate to take care of your needs and help and things that need to happen. So if I don't know what's happening on the minute details of what's happening and where our money is going, then I am negligent and I do not deserve to set up on that board.
Gary, we have 3 minutes out and a long list to cover, so grab off the one issue on this list that you absolutely have to talk about before we leave today.
Well, I think really it really is the alternative custody program of Sheriff Johnson's. I know everybody's on, well, the board is all on board with it. It's almost free property. But again, and everybody wants to talk about not in my backyard. Well, these citizens have legitimate reasons why it shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. And to shove that down their throat, mm-hmm, I am not in favor of, will never support it. And the other thing is the drug issue that is current in our jail right now today, the illicit drug traffic that's in there, you cannot tell me is going to not happen in this new alternative custody program.
Oh, you think?
Closer to other people.
Yeah, exactly.
So no, I'm not in favor of that at all. So, you guys, I think to me, and this is the ending that I want to say, win, lose, or draw, whoever sets up there, folks, you need to hold them accountable to God, you, and this country. And to me, that's why my motto has been, in God we trust, putting God first in our lives, strengthening our family units, and defending your inalienable rights. So, how much more time do we have, Janet?
1.5 minutes.
Yeah, well, I want to thank you, too, for all that you do.
And thank you very much, and give us your contact information.
So it's Oxley Supervisor, District 5, the number 5.com. You can call me on my personal phone if you want to. It's 530-782-2222.
Do it again slowly.
Slower. 530-782-2222. I just want to thank you guys for what you do in our community. I want to thank the other people that allow candidates to come on. I think we have an issue with media and having the truth be told.
Yeah.
So, but I think we're in the right track. I think things are changing here in Shasta County. I hope that, again, win, lose, or draw, that I, as running for District 5 supervisor, has brought a message back for people to remember, and that's to put God first in your lives, strengthen our families, make decisions that strengthen our families, not weaken them, and then we need to defend our inalienable rights, and that means if we have to stand up to the state and say no, then that's what we do.
Because we are for the state of Jefferson, and the time has come.
For 51.
And we are working hard to get it done.
Yes.
News from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Attention.